From the Land-Grant University at Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's December the 30th, 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. In agricultural news, a legal ruling in California may allow ethanol from the Midwest to access the West Coast biofuels market. Canadian law has changed. It will end an 80-year-old marketing monopoly. And Dave Dickey will have details of all the stories. Also, during this half hour, we'll hear about the Congressional Research Service and how it's projecting government outlays for the crop insurance programs will outpace spending on traditional commodity programs over the next decade. And we'll take a look at how USDA is preparing for next month's January crop production report. We'll talk with Brad Schwab, director of the Illinois NASS office in Springfield. It all happens right here on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
This stock and commodity report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from Bates Commodities in Normal, providing clients with the latest market information based on research by ADM Investor Services and other independent sources. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. The nearby contract in the soft red winter wheat up 6.5 cents for the last trading day of the year, $6.86 and a quarter for the July. September at 7.01 and three quarters, up 6. December futures at 7.20, 6 and three quarters higher. From the hard red pit in Kansas City, $7.32, 17 and a quarter cents, rather 17 and a half cents higher. Corn pit now, March contract, 6.46 and a half, up 8 and a half. The May at 6.54 and three quarters, 8 and a half cents higher. July futures, $6.61 and a quarter, up 8 and three quarters. September at 6.13 and a quarter, up 7 and a quarter. In December of next year, $5.86 and a quarter. December corn for the new crop, up 4 and a quarter in Chicago. January soybeans, $11.98 and a half, up 11 cents. March futures, $12.07 and three quarters, 10 and three quarters higher. The May at 12.17 and a half, up 10 and a quarter. July, $12.27, 9 and three quarters higher, and November beans at $12.04 and a quarter cents, up 3 and three quarter cents. January bean meal at $309.40, up 2.80. January bean oil, $52.09, 95 cents higher. Live cattle futures finished the February at $121.45, 90 cents lower. January feeders at $146.35, 52 and a half cents lower for 100 pounds, and February lean hogs at $84.30, up 32 and a half. April's down 2 and a half cents at 87.70 on the afternoon. You are listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures, $98.91 a barrel, 73 cents lower. Ethanol at $2.20 and 3 tenths of a cent, a tenth of a cent higher. Natural gas at $2.99 and 6 tenths, that's down 3 and a tenth of a cent. And January heating oil or diesel fuel at $2.93 and a half cents, up a penny and 7 tenths. Gold futures for the day, $1,565.80 an ounce, up $25.90. And the Dow now at 12,226, just about 61 points lower. The dollar at 80.26 is down 0.22. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area tonight. A 30% chance of showers. That'll happen before midnight. It'll be cloudy, gradually becoming partly cloudy with a low of around 31 degrees this evening. West-northwest winds at 14 to 17, gusting to 24. And then on Saturday, mostly sunny skies, a high Saturday of 51 beautiful degrees. Southwest wind at 6 to 9. They'll increase to 15 to 18. They could gust all the way to 24 tomorrow. And Saturday night for New Year's Eve, mostly cloudy skies, a low of just 38 degrees. It'll be breezy with a south wind at 8 to 23 miles an hour, gusting to 30. And then New Year's Day, partly sunny, a high of 40 degrees, a breezy with a west-northwest wind at 23 to 25, gusting to 40 miles per hour in the area. And on Sunday night, mostly cloudy and blustery, a low of 22 degrees. Monday should be partly sunny, a high of just 27 degrees. It'll be January on Monday, of course. Monday night, clear and low. Get this. Here we go. Into the teens. 15 degrees on Monday evening. Tuesday, mostly sunny and a high of 28 degrees. Tuesday night, cloudy and 23. Wednesday, sunny and 37. Wednesday night, cloudy and 24. And by the time we get to Thursday, we'll see mostly sunny skies and a high again near 40 degrees. We'll have more on the weather forecast a bit later in the program. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Comes to you from the University of Illinois. You can find us online anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming, from the pre-opening market to report to the Closing Market Report and everything in between.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
On a Friday afternoon, it is time to check the futures markets. On the phone line with us is Mike Zuzulo. He's a global commodity analytics and consulting in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd. Happy New Year to you and all the listeners.
Happy New Year to you as well. Hey, I asked Dave Dickey if he would do something special for me today, and that was to put up on the numbers he provides for me at the end of the week for Commodity Week and the changes on the weekly, the changes for the yearly trade as well. And guess what? We were a bit higher in both corn and soybeans. We were off, I guess, quite a little bit, down $1.95 and a quarter. But those the corn futures were 17 cents higher today than they were just a year ago in the continuation chart. And they finished the day and the month higher, too, this week.
Yeah, the interesting year-to-date price change for lead month continuation, the numbers that I pulled up would say we were going to finish up about 3% in lead month corn, down 14% in beans, and down about 18% in the wheat. So that pretty clearly shows us that the corn did help keep some of these other commodities up. And that's kind of the trend we're going into 2012 now, Todd, especially with the weather shifting and the eyes and the intelligence and analysis shifting towards Argentina and the corn production potentially being hurt down there even more, because the most recent updated forecast would say you still got 7 to 8 more days of hot, dry weather conditions at about the worst time you could ask for when it comes to the growth potential and the production potential for the crop. So interesting to notice that the way we're leaving 2011, we're going to be beginning 2012 in terms of the corn being probably, for most intents purposes, the leader to the upside, at least until we see some of the dormancy come to fruition in the northern hemisphere, be it Europe, be it Ukraine, be it the United States, when it comes to the wheat crop. So interesting thing to keep in mind as a marketing person. And it would suggest use your corn as your last thing to sell, whether it's old crop in the bin, piecemeal it out more slowly, and as far as new crop and garnering more acres, try and work that bean-corn ratio to where it's a premium to the corn before you start letting too many new crop bushels go.
That was what I was thinking. Does this last couple of weeks change the idea that really the market didn't care whether you were planting corn or beans in the United States? And now it appears that it might be thinking about that. Of course, we won't really know until we get it later in the season, and I suppose the month we'll find out for sure is in the month of February.
No, that's a good point. I think it has changed it for sure. And, you know, in the last couple weeks, since mid-November, as a matter of fact, so more than just a couple weeks, that new crop corn-bean ratio has gained 3%. So beans have lost about 3% to the corn on that ratio. And I think we're already in that mindset as a trade that we're going to need to secure more United States acreage. And I think that will continue in terms of the path of least resistance as long as we stay dry in Argentina. I think that's where maybe what we see is, this is what I'll be watching for anyways, if we don't see strong fund investment after the first of the year when we come back on Tuesday and next week heading into the January 12th report, if we don't see that, will we see the beans start to break and the corn stays where it's at? That's going to be a leading indicator to maybe stepping a little faster and being more aggressive on getting some 2012 beans locked in.
So we had MF Global, we had Europe that really stepped on the marketplace in October and November, even parts of December, I think. Have we made it through all of that? And I suppose Europe's the one that's left to mess with still.
Yeah, I think that's the biggie. I mean, that's where these last 2 weeks, we were talking about it this morning, we saw the gold drop dramatically, about 7.5% since the 21st of December. We've seen the dollar rally about 2.5% since the exact same time period. That's the deflationary, more risk-off nervousness about the global economy heading into 2012, and I think that directly relates back to the euro going below 130, sitting at about 129 heading into the new year, and a lot of very smart people saying if you go below 128 in the lead month euro, you're stepping into an area that you don't want to have to take the financial markets because of the fear that might be racked up because of the result of that. So I think that is the biggest player, and I've heard a lot on the news, financial news, about people saying, well, we're going to decouple, the risk-on, risk-off trade is not going to be as strong in 2012 as it was in 2011. I don't really buy into that the first couple months of the year because I think the currencies and the metals will continue to promote the idea that we're either strengthening globally and we're coming into a global economic recovery and China's going to have a soft landing, or the dollar and the euro are going to react negatively with one another. Europe's going to promote a hard landing in China, and therefore we're going to stay tied together as asset classes. So that's kind of the bigger picture, longer-term stuff. And that's where I think at the end of the day, if you get these kind of rallies like we've been wanting ever since Thanksgiving, it's a relief rally in my mind, and it's a rally you want to hedge something into.
Okay. When you look out, are there any calendar dates in Europe that you're pegging as important dates to watch or things to watch in Europe as they relate to the commodity markets and, more importantly, the price of currencies?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think Italy is going to be the number one thing that would probably bring down the rest of Europe or cause some country to go ahead and snap out of the EMU and say, I've had enough. I'm not going to live with this austerity. And that's going to be Italy. And I think Italy's got the issue of having to recirculate and reinstitute its debt on the open market, and it's going to be the first 60 to 70 days of the calendar year that they've got to do the vast majority. I think we're looking at, I want to say it was $574 billion U.S. dollars that they've got to come back in and secure in terms of debt when it comes to the first 60 or 70 days of 2012, Todd. So I think that's where the first 2 months of the year are going to be really, really critical.
Thanks so much for taking the time with us
today.
Thanks
again, Todd. Have a great holiday.
Hey, you too. That is Mike Zuzlo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. Joins us here on this last trading day of the 2011 year.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
You know, don't forget to visit our website. The address is WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, including Commodity Week. It's our weekly look at what's been happening in the world of agriculture. This week and last week will be the same Commodity Week program, although we'll update the numbers in the beginning of that with the yearly changes. So if you haven't listened to it, go back and do that. And then next week, we've already booked our guest, and that will be Michael Cordonnier. He is, of course, at Corn and Soybean Advisor, and will talk to us about what's happening in South America. Now here's Dave with the news.
In agricultural news, a U.S. district judge on Thursday ruled California's low-carbon fuel standard violates the Commerce Clause of the U.S. Constitution. The ruling is important because it could allow the Midwest ethanol industry to access California's estimated 1.5 billion gallon biofuels market, in turn creating an additional market for U.S. corn farmers. According to court documents, the U.S. District Court of the Eastern District of California granted a motion to ethanol interest groups, Growth Energy, and the Renewable Fuels Association, along with other agriculture groups, to stop enforcement of the LCFS while the case moves forward. The standard, which took effect in January of 2010, has one key component that has made life difficult for corn-based ethanol, a greenhouse gas emissions penalty for international indirect land use change. or the theory that expanding U.S. corn acres in response to ethanol is leading to land use change in other countries. As a result, corn-based ethanol from the Midwest is considered to be a higher carbon fuel in California. Canada has approved a new law that will end the marketing monopoly that the Canadian Wheat Board has enjoyed since the 1930s. Previously, Canadian farmers in the country's western provinces were required to sell their wheat and barley only to the board. The new law, which goes into effect next August, will allow farmers to sell to whomever they choose, and many anticipate that growers will consider selling to local elevators in the U.S. USDA's Farm Service Agency requires all wheat imported from western Canada to carry an end-use certificate that lists quite a few details about the wheat, including the class of wheat being imported, grade, protein content, moisture content, dockage level, and other details. All of that, though, could prove overly troublesome for a local elevator in the U.S. who might think twice about buying wheat directly from Canadian farmers. The Congressional Research Service is projecting that the federal spending on crop insurance over the next 10 years will outpace spending on traditional commodity programs by more than 20%, a possibility that might capture the attention of budget cutters looking for sources of savings. CBS says that insurance companies, farm groups, and some members of Congress are concerned that additional reductions in federal support to crop insurance will harm the financial health of the industry and possibly jeopardize the delivery of crop insurance to farmers. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week in the upcoming Corn and Soybean Classic Series. If you have not signed up for it yet, don't worry. You can still walk in. $75 a head. We'll be out January 10th. That's a Tuesday in Mount Vernon and then Springfield and Champaign that week. And the following week, we'll make a trip across the northern part of the state of Illinois. Find all the details at cropsciconferences.com. That's cropsci, C-R-O-P-S-C-I, conferences.com, all one word. It's the Corn and Soybean Classic Series, U of I Extension weed scientist and entomologist, agronomist, and plant specialist will be along for the ride. Gary Schnitke will be there, too. CropSciConferences.com for the Corn and Soybean Classic Series. You can learn everything you need to know right there on the website. I'll MC that program and look forward to seeing you then. A bit like I saw you in the month of December when we were out on the Illinois Farm Economic Summits with the Ag Economist, the Farm Doc team, including the man you're just about to hear from USDA NASS. That's Brad Schwab. He's the director of the Illinois office. I talked to him about collecting the data for the January USDA report. That comes out the 12th of next month.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
We're joined by Brad Schwab with the Illinois office, belongs to USDA, from the National Agricultural Statistics Service. Brad, you made a presentation in December at the Illinois Farm Economic Summits. You were gathering at that point the final yield data for the 2011 crop year. Tell me how that process works.
Well, we're currently surveying about 3,000 Illinois farmers, and at this point we have been setting yields through the month of November. And now this will be going into the final annual production report on January 12th. So the Illinois farmers will fill out a survey form and give us their final yields for the year, not only for corn but for soybeans. They'll also report any grains that they have in storage.
How does this particular report differ from earlier crop production reports?
The earlier reports for August and September, for example, many of the farmers had not harvested their crops yet, so they were giving us their projections of what they thought their yields were going to be versus now they have already put the grain in the bin and they have their scale tickets and will be able to give us exact numbers of what the yields were.
Those reports that are due out in January come out which day?
On January 12th.
And they are compiled not only in the state of Illinois but in other states and then by Washington, D.C.?
That's correct. There will be a national release that morning at 8:30 Eastern time, and those numbers then will become available to the public.
How's data collection been done, and how accurate has it been over time?
Well, we just celebrated 150 years, and that being said, at the USDA level, the fundamentals of statistics and how we set our estimates has not changed over those years. I mean, the tools that we use have speeded up the process. But when we sample farmers, it's very important that they all report their information to us so that we can ensure that the accuracy of the estimates will be there as they were designed.
Is their data information private?
Absolutely. It's protected by law, and when they report to us, we can assure them of that fact, that it will not be disclosed to the public. Not even a Freedom of Information Act can gain access to it.
Have you updated the way you collect data over time? For instance, I know you do phone and you do by mail, but do you also do other types of data collection, satellite, other things that weren't available in the earlier years?
Well, one example would be that we now have our surveys on the Internet so that the farmer can go out on his computer and put in his unique ID and fill out the form online without even intervention from our office. But two, the satellite imagery that we use allows us to have access to acreages so that we can use that information when we set county estimates. But we're also in the process of experimenting with vegetative indices and using that information to help estimate what yields are going to be early in the growing season.
Why not just use the FSA numbers? Data is collected on many farms and commodities by the Farm Service Agency.
Well, most farmers would prefer that they only had to report once to the FSA office, but the reason why we cannot use the FSA data exclusively is because of the timing of our surveys. We start doing surveys on acreage well in advance of when farmers are required to report their certified acreage to the FSA office. That being said, though, we do use that information in October to true up our acreage estimates and also for our county estimate numbers in when we're setting those in January and February. We'll then take advantage of those of that data that the farmers has reported to the FSA office.
How are the grain stocks and feed and residual usage numbers calculated?
Well, every quarter we do basically two surveys. One is for on-farm grain stocks where we ask farmers to give us what they have in storage, and then we contact elevators for the off-farm portion of that. And they're combined together, and that's how we come up with our quarterly numbers.
One final question. Can you tell us a bit more about the Census of Agriculture?
The Census of Agriculture we do every 5 years will be coming up in 2012. That will be the reference year. And next December in 2012, we will be mailing out roughly 2 million forms nationwide to farmers to fill out.
That's Brad Schwab, director of the Illinois USDA NASS office located at the Illinois State Fairgrounds in Springfield. I spoke to him during the Illinois Farm Economics Summits earlier in this month. Speaking of which, you can find those podcasts and all the details about the summit at the Farm Doc Daily website. That's farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. You're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report. It is the very last trading day of 2011, a Friday afternoon. The markets for commodities will not open again until Tuesday morning. Not even the overnight trade on Monday, but Tuesday morning the markets will open. There will be a Closing Market Report on all of our radio stations Monday afternoon. But it's a compilation of some things, including a brand new interview I did with Jerry Goodell a bit earlier in the week. He's with North America Risk Management. We talk about the commodity markets and the MF Global debacle. From his vantage point in Chicago, it has just been awful. I know that it's been awful across the countryside. Jerry Goodell on Monday's Closing Market Report. Back in just a couple of minutes for most of you. For the rest of you, we'll say goodbye now and have a great 2012 and a very safe new year.
It's National Bicarbonate of Soda Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1791, William Pollard of Philadelphia received a U.S. patent for spinning cotton by water power. In 1817, the first coffee was planted in Hawaii. In 1851, Asa Griggs Candler was born. A wholesale druggist in 1887, he purchased the formula for Coca-Cola for $2,300. Candler devoted $50,000 a year to advertising, an unheard-of amount at the turn of the century. His goal was to make the drink a national product. He did this partially by bottling the product and not relying totally on fountain sales. Candler sold the company in 1919 for $25 million. In 1931, Sir John Hogton was born. A Welsh meteorologist, he brought attention to the buildup of carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere and its result of global warming, now known as the greenhouse effect. His work led to the 1997 UN Conference on Climate Change that produced the Kyoto Protocol, a treaty among industrial nations to combat global warming. In 1982, a second full moon occurred during the month of December, what is called a blue moon. What made this one even more unusual was that it was also a total lunar eclipse in the U.S. And that's this day in agricultural history.
University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You know, time through the ages has been adapted for many purposes. The Romans were known to change a calendar just to keep a politician in office a bit longer. And some calendars work off moon cycles. Others don't. In a moment, we'll hear how the Gregorian calendar is used to tell time today.
U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock. At the tone, Eastern Standard Time. 11 hours, 12 minutes, 25 seconds. Universal Time.
This is the official voice of time in the United States. It is the U.S. Naval Observatory Master Clock Announcer, a voice many radio and television stations depend upon. Well, the U.S. Naval Observatory's written mission includes determining the positions and motions of the Earth, Sun, Moon, planets, stars, and, well, other celestial objects, providing astronomical data determining precise time, measuring the Earth's rotation, and maintaining the master clock for the United States. The U.S. works off the Gregorian, or Christian, calendar, and our concept of a year, of time, is based on the Earth's motion around the sun, the time from one fixed point, such as the solstice or the equinox, to the next, is called a tropical year. Its length is about 365 days, but varies by a few minutes or hours. Our concept of a month is based on the moon's motion around the Earth, although this connection has been broken in the calendar we now use. The time from one new moon to the next is about 29 and a half days, so the moon cycles and our monthly Christian calendar don't quite coincide. It has years of 365 or 366 days, is divided into 12 months that have no relationship to the motion of the moon, and groups weeks in sets of 7 days. But today, a website called Calendars Through the Ages reports almost everyone takes the precision of our calendars for granted, unaware of the long threads spooling out from our clocks and watches backward in time, running through virtually every major revolution in human science. The thread, it says, runs largely through the West, since this is the source of the world's civic calendar, but also casts lines of varying sizes and thicknesses outward to China, India, Egypt, Arabia, and Mesopotamia. Unwinding backward, it pauses at Clavius and Bacon, at the rush of knowledge coming from Islam in the East during the Middle Ages, at bloody wars fought over dates after Rome's collapse, and at Rome itself, at its height, when Julius Caesar fell in love with Cleopatra, an affair that gave the West its calendar. Many different calendars have been developed over the millennia to help people organize their lives. According to a recent estimate, there are about 40 calendars used in the world today, particularly for determining religious dates. Most modern countries use the Gregorian or Christian calendar for their official activity.
At the tone, Eastern Standard Time, 11 hours, 13 minutes, 10 seconds.
For all of us at University of Illinois Extension and the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, the land-grant university in the state of Illinois, we wish you a very prosperous and very happy brand new year. I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.